The BS Report is a free-flowing conversation that occasionally touches on mature subjects.
First of all,
this is the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
It might be cool, I don't know. And if it's not, I don't care.
The BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Bill Simmons works for ESPN. He's also named the sports guy, and he writes a comical sports column. He must be a popular dude.
The BS Report.
It's got a real dirty sound, like a rusty steak knife cutting through a well-aged steak.
Now.
Here's Bill Simmons.
Welcome to the BS Report. Another hazy day here in Southern California. October gloom. Who knew? On the Subway Fresh Take Hotline, we're happy to have him. The hottest quarterback in the league right now, Tim Tebow. Tim, what's happening?
What the? No.
That's not Tim Tebow. That's Cousin Sal. My God, I've been lied to.
What? What a disappointment. First, it's gloomy in L.A. on a Tuesday, and now Cousin Sal instead of Tim Tebow.
Have you turned your life over to our Lord Savior yet after watching that Tebow performance?
I think we learned a lot about Tim Tebow and Sundays. The Lord rests on Sundays, but sometimes he awakes from a nap and he sees that Tim Tebow's down in the fourth quarter and he gives him a little boost.
That's what I felt like happened. It was certainly one of the most improbable comebacks I've ever watched, because we had that game on one of the four TVs, and the Broncos, you can't even put into words how bad their offense was.
Yeah.
I mean, it was like, there was some really bad offense on Sunday, because the Seattle-Cleveland game was epic in its own right. But not only was Denver's offense bad, but they were terrified to let Tebow do anything. And then when he actually had to do something, the passes were like 5-6 yards away from the receiver.
Mm-hmm.
So 15-0, and then, I guess the percentages at that point were like 1 in 1,000 that you can come back when it's 15-0 with 3 minutes left. But that was pretty exciting.
If you have no faith in God, it's 1 in 1,000, but it's probably -600 if you believe in the right guy.
I'm in. I'm not going to apologize. I love it. I love watching Tebow. I get excited. I get excited when they cut to him pumping his fist and stuff. I like that he had the prayer circle before the winning field goal.
It is pretty cool, but it doesn't really make sense. And like you said, I don't know how much you blame on him the first three quarters and 9-10 minutes, or the blame the play calling, but it's a little weird that nothing gets done. And it's even weirder that, all right, they get the onside kick. And I just think if you're Miami on the two-point conversion, let's take it to the two-point conversion, which already is 150-1 odds that they got to that point. The two-point conversion. He's empty backfield. He lines up, but he's at the 7-yard line. At this point, if you're Miami, you got to spot shadow Tebow. You have to send a linebacker that just watches him, because you have to think, this is the ESPN, this is a Sports Center highlight they're leading with. If he just quarterback sneaks it from the 7 here, where he's taking the snap, and sure enough, untouched. Just disgusting on Miami's part. I don't get it.
I actually read up on this play, and we had something on Grantland about it last night, but also, the Miami Dolphins players were upset. They didn't have their goal line defense on the field. They had the nickel. They were in a nickel. And that's like an old video game play where you spread it with five receivers and you just hope that the computer just spreads it out and then you run with the quarterback. It actually worked. I couldn't believe it. Pretty exciting, though.
If he throws a touchdown pass, it's one thing. If they run it in, it's another. But if he runs it in from the 7 there, that's unforgivable. Sorry.
You write a gambling blog on Grantland every Thursday. I think we need odds for this, because it's a three-team race now for Andrew Luck. We're down to the Colts, Rams, and Dolphins. I think the Broncos took themselves out of it with that win, and clearly they're a little better, and they have a different motivation. They'll get to 4 or 5 wins probably.
Mm-hmm.
Colts might not win a game and might actually be smart enough not to try to win a game. The Dolphins seem like if you're looking at those three teams, the Dolphins have the most talent. There's no question. And they've been in a couple of these games. The Rams have secretly been an all-time atrocity. I think they might be the worst team in the league. If the Colts and Rams were playing on a neutral field, who would you have favored?
Oh, my God. I don't know why, but I think the Colts just a little bit.
Me too. Yeah, I feel like the Colts, by 2.5.
Yeah. Yeah, I would take 2.5. But I think, you know, there's tanking and then there's tanking. Like, if you're the Colts and you want Luck, do you trade, like, Reggie Wayne to the Rams? Like, why didn't they trade Reggie Wayne to the Rams last week when instead of Rams picking up Lloyd?
Yeah, that's
like,
a good point.
That would be a new height of tanking, and I'm ready to see it right now because it's obvious what some of these teams are doing.
Well, I don't know if you've noticed, but maybe just by keeping Jim Caldwell, that's your form of tanking.
Oh, that's true. Yeah.
Because the Colts players called him out. Jeff Saturday said said after the game, like, we were just out-coached. Like, when you have a player say that, it's time to go.
yeah, that's not good.
Hey, one other thing we should talk about. We're taping on a Tuesday today, unfortunately. We usually tape on Mondays, but we had to do the...
Well, your new best friend, Billy Hunter, I had to step aside.
I know.
What are you going to do?
I know. Players Union. We had a Players Union called. But, you know, this bye week thing has gotten pretty interesting. They changed the rules on how you can practice during the bye week, and you get a whole bunch of time off. I watched football on Sunday with Mike Lombardi, and he was making a big deal about this, about how these teams coming off the bye weeks just look sloppy. Now, the numbers are the bye week teams are 3-9 coming off byes. Last week they were 5-6. I'm sorry, they lost 5 out of 6 last weekend. Now, Mike Florio wrote on his blog that this is a little overrated because the teams that have been on the bye weeks really haven't been that good for the most part. And I don't know if I believe that because these teams do look sloppy. Do you believe in this bye week thing?
No, I definitely do, and I think it hurts teams extra. Like we saw last Monday night against the Jets, it's Matt Moore. I believe the Dolphins are coming off a bye, and you know they can't under the new rules. They can't even contact this guy 4 days out of the first bye week or something.
Right.
It's insane, and he, you know he's never seen the offense, and you know you can't even slip him a playbook and go over some things. And yeah, of course it hurts, and some of the veterans will be able to rally, but you know, just looking at this week, the Cowboys play the Eagles, and Eagles are coming off a bye. We're coming off an unlikely thrashing of the Rams. I would much rather be in the Cowboys spot right now.
No, but we might have the law of gambling could apply here. Now you have all these people who lose money when they gamble, like us.
Yeah,
and they're looking at this bye week thing and overrating the bye week, and now this will be the week it flips around and the bye week teams go 6-0.
Yeah, so just disregard everything we just said.
Here are the bye week teams from last week. Mm-hmm. The Patriots, the Buffalo Bills, the Cincinnati Bengals, the New York Giants, the Philadelphia Eagles, and the San Francisco 49ers. All 6 of those teams are good. So if right. Florio's point that teams coming off the bye week haven't been that good, I don't think Buffalo and Cincinnati, I don't think both those teams can make the playoffs. But conceivably, on paper, those could be 6 playoff teams. So we'll see if this holds this week.
We'll see this week. And because they were all good, everyone's fantasy team averaged 53 points last week.
Yeah, including
mine. You were able to field a full lineup.
The bye week teams for this week, just to, if you're curious, the Jets, the Raiders, the Falcons, the Bears, the Packers, and the Bucks. All of those teams are pretty good, too. So maybe this will... maybe this will turn around.
Let me ask you this. How many divisions are locked up? Like, no injuries aside, let's say if everyone keeps their squad right now, I say 3 divisions are locked up.
Well, you know, if the Chargers hadn't choked away that Jets game, I think the Pats would have been on cruise control in the AFC East. Because I just don't think the Jets could have gotten a 10 wins, and now they have a chance. So I don't think that one's locked up.
You know, I didn't even count that one. No.
Right. I think Packers definitely.
NFC North, true. Right. NFC West with the Niners.
Niners definitely. That's it. Just 2, right?
I think AFC South. I think Houston pulled away from Tennessee. I know it's not as huge. You know, they're not 3-4 games up, but. That's it. That's the only hope. I mean, you know, it's not going to be Jacksonville. It's not going to be the Colts. I think Houston's the cream of the crop.
Hold on. I'm going to look at this because am I wrong to think that Jacksonville has a chance to go 9-7 after watching last night? Please talk me out of that one.
I don't know what's going on with that Jacksonville team. They've given up 7 points in the last 6 quarters to Baltimore and Pittsburgh. Mm. Ridiculous. Is it that hard to get up for them if you're these other teams?
They're 2-5, but they play Houston. Oh, the ESPN pop-up ad is the Geico guys coming after us. Oh my
really?
God. They play Houston twice in the next 4 weeks, and they're two
Geico
games.
Geico guy featured prominently in a best man speech we've witnessed.
Oh, yeah. That's right. Well,
they're
just
at
saying
Houston. They lose to Houston. We don't even talk about it, right?
Jacksonville just played Pittsburgh and Baltimore. Mm-hmm. If you throw out the first 15 minutes of that Pittsburgh game, their last seven quarters, they outscored Pittsburgh and Baltimore something like 26 to like 9 or 7.
Yeah, well, 7 points. The Pittsburgh 26 to 7. Half. The Ravens scored 7 in the second half.
You're not impressed by that?
No, I am. I don't think they're winning the division. I think Houston locks up that division.
I think 9 wins takes that division.
Yeah.
So Jacksonville would have to go 7-2 down the stretch. You're probably right. 8-8 they could get to.
Wow.
Why am I lukewarm on Houston?
I didn't like them either. And then just to see how they handle Tennessee when they're healthy, you know, Andre Johnson, Williams back, it's going to get even better.
Well, when do you think Chris Johnson's holdout's going to end?
You know, isn't it weird with these guys? Shouldn't they just say, anyone who's holding out, they should, if you're management, you should load up their contract with incentives in the first 5 games. Say, all right, I'll tell you what, we'll give you $20 million if you average more than 2.8 yards per carry in the first 5 games. And then you're like, oh, where do I sign? Great. And it'll just never happen. So,
I got to read just quickly, and then we'll get to the week 8 picks. I hate talking about fantasy, but I have to bring up Elliot, who's in our league, who's nobody likes because he voted out John Hamm, who's the coolest guy in our league. And,
right.
We have the survivor vote.
Coolest guy in Hollywood, let alone our stupid league.
Coolest guy is by far the neatest thing about our league was that Don Draper was in it.
Right.
Elliot wins last year, thinks it would be hysterical to vote off John Hamm. We're waiting an hour and a half for the draft to start because John Hamm hasn't gotten there yet. He's on the set. He's being Don Draper. Comes flying in, has a beer, and Elliot votes him out, and he leaves. He's there 10 minutes.
Yeah, has a sip
of
the beer, yeah.
The irony of this is that Elliot has put together, in my opinion, the worst fantasy team I've ever seen on paper.
It's so arguably Early Doucette is his best play. Yeah.
So he's got – his quarterbacks are Matt Schaub and Matt Hasselbeck. His running back, he spent like $60 on Chris Johnson, who's been just a catastrophe. He's got Ryan Matthews, James Starks, LaDainian Tomlinson. His receivers are Early Doucette, Brandon Lloyd, Santana Moss, Jabbar Gaffney, Mario Vandekamp, and Hines Ward. His tight ends are Jason Witten and Zach Miller. His kicker is Billy Cundiff of the Ravens, who almost got shut out yesterday. And then he's got the Saints defense. That's his entire team.
This is a 2014 league. I would look at it like, not good. You need to do some work.
It's a 10-team league. It's like impossible to have that team. How do you have that team?
I don't know.
He doesn't have one guy I would think about trading for except for James Starks. It's the only guy I like on his entire team. He started.
Does he get Andrew Luck automatically next year? Oh, no, he gets voted out. That's right.
And plus, he had Santana Moss broke his hand.
That's right, 5 to 7 weeks.
It's so good. I gotta. Needless to say, his record is 1-6 in our division. He's put up in 7 weeks. He's put up 595 points.
Yeah,
which averages out to not basically 80 points a week. But
you know what? Maybe next week we'll read the exchange, the great fantasy football trash talking exchanges between our crazy friend Brad and our friend Paul.
Was that trash talking, or did that go to another level?
Yeah, I don't know what it is. Someone was trash talking, and the other one was just dropping nuclear bombs on the trash talker.
Is it trash talking if the FBI would investigate the emails to make sure there's not terrorist activity?
Yeah, it could be the first fantasy football related
murder.
Yeah.
Oh, that would be interesting. Or maybe like a Lifetime movie where a fantasy owner kills another one. All right, let's do week 8 lines, and again, we have 6 teams on bye week this week.
6 teams on bye weeks. It's week 8. You lead this contest 4-3. There's really no prize, so it doesn't matter. But first game, Minnesota at Carolina.
Mm. thought Ponder was like half decent.
I like all these rookie quarterbacks. I wouldn't bet against any football team based on Gabbard, Ponder, Cam Newton, or Dalton. Like, I'll pick against them for other reasons, but I wouldn't. I mean, we would never. I don't think we've ever had four rookie quarterbacks this not sucky, right?
That are confident. I mean, even like Flacco's game last night, these guys don't even have games like that. Much less like what we saw with the Carson Palmer, Kyle Bowler debacle. I think this line is going to be a little jacked only because people like Cam Newton. So I'm going to say Panthers by 6.
Wow. I thought it was going to be jacked. I thought 4.5 is jacked for this line. They're keeping it at 3.
Whoa.
So the Redskins were also 3, right? So I guess they're saying Minnesota is good as the Redskins were this time last week.
I don't agree. The Vikings secondary is atrocious. I mean,
it's still 1-6 on the road has to get more than 3 points.
Is Cam going to end up? Will Cam end up being one of the top 5 fantasy performers this year?
Yeah, he's number 2 right now in our league.
Is he really?
Why not? He can keep it up. They have a lousy schedule. And if you watch Trent Dilfer like talk on ESPN, like he like yells at you. I've never said anything bad about Cam Newton. He makes me feel like shameful. Something special here, and don't even try to compare him to anyone else you've ever seen. Like, all right, relax.
You're right. Cam Newton, in our league at least, which we use traditional scoring, 197.8 points through 7 weeks. Yeah, do you know who the top running back is?
I think I do know. Is it Forte or Fred Jackson?
It's Forte's 1 and Fred Jackson's 2.
Yeah.
That's pretty interesting. Both of those guys went for like a song in our league. Michael Turner's 4th, even more shocking. Anyway, let's keep going.
All right, second game, New Orleans at St. Louis.
Mm. Double figures for this, obviously. And I think they're dying for you to take St. Louis in this game. So I'm going to say New Orleans by 12.5.
You get it by half a point. I said 14, and it's 13.
Mm.
I'm going to warn you, I may be giving you a little bit of an edge here by saying this, but I think there are 5 or 6 games in the 3-team teaser range. I mean, I may have to go to a GA meeting this week because I don't know what I'm capable of.
Well, we have to really seriously think about an Andrew Luck strategy because we've been down this road. We did this with basketball once to a lot of success in the last few weeks during Tankapalooza in 2007. Mm-hmm. I don't even remember that, the Odin Durant year.
I do remember, but it's week 8 in the NFL. It's amazing. We're talking about this now.
But maybe we just put the Dolphins, Colts, and who's the other team, the Rams?
Rams.
They're just in a 3-team tease every week where the other team's getting the 10 points or a 3-team 6-point tease or whatever, anything, because I don't think they can make these lines high enough.
Let's do that. Let's really do that. I know we talk about a lot of things. Let's try that.
You like that idea? All right.
Yeah,
so this week, are all 3 of those teams playing? Yeah, the Rams are playing, the Dolphins are playing, and the Colts are playing. All right, so we'll talk about this at the end. Keep going.
Yeah. All right. And they're the Colts. They're at Tennessee.
Mm. Unfortunately, Tennessee was really bad last week. This line should be higher, but it's not going to be. It's going to be Titans by 7.5.
Oh, no. Oh, you might still get it. No, I get it barely. It's I said 11. I thought it was way high. Team lost 62-7, and it's 9.5.
Oh.
I would actually like the Colts a little in this game to step it up if Tennessee wasn't so horrible last week. I mean, they need to prove something.
I like Tennessee a lot, and I watched that game pretty closely. They have no offense with Kenny Britt. It's basically now the other team, the defenses have figured it out, and Chris Johnson, they just is doing nothing. And Hasselbeck's throwing these. It almost looks like he's trying that pass interference offense. Who was the guy who did that last year? He was just trying to get pass interferences.
I don't
remember that.
A quarterback, you mean? Was it Cutler?
Yeah, one of the NFL quarterbacks last year, we used to make fun of him about it. It was the pass interference was like their offense. Was it Flacco? But Hasselbeck was just like chucking it up and hoping that like somebody was going to bump a receiver. I don't know. Yeah. I like the Colts too in that. Maybe we should abandon the Luck strategy for this week.
this is what Tennessee did. I mean, we didn't think Hasselbeck was that good. Now he's coming back down to earth. Yeah. These teams are even. I think the Colts have a better running back. But
yeah.
Here we go. Arizona at Baltimore.
Oof.
I mean, here's another one. Here's another three-team teaser. Kidding me?
Are we sure the Ravens are good?
No, but I'm pretty sure Arizona's bad. And West coming east on the road doesn't always work, but...
Why does it seem like it's so tough for the Ravens to move the ball?
Yeah, they shouldn't have that hard a time scoring.
I know that they've had 155 points this year, but that Pittsburgh game was pretty fluky. Where they scored like 34 or 40 or whatever it was.
Yeah, they got up for that game as much as they mailed in last night.
They got those turnovers. Then the Rams, they put up 37. I guess they have put up points.
Let me ask you this statement. If I would have told you Maurice Jones-Drew is going to fumble the ball four times now because of reviews and whatever, he's going to fumble the ball four times and Jacksonville's not going to score a touchdown, how much on the money line Baltimore would – how many cars in your neighborhood would you bet on Baltimore money line?
I was stunned by that game. I rarely get stunned by football games, but – they're a veteran team. Like, you don't mail in Monday night games. And what worried me, if I'm a Ravens fan, is it actually seemed like they were trying.
Yeah.
And it was like the Jags outplayed them in that game.
A lot of dumb penalties.
I don't know what to make
of it. But even with 5 minutes left, I'm like, all right, they're going to win 10-9, right? And it just kept rolling and rolling.
They had real trouble protecting Flacco, too.
Yeah.
But,
Arizona, what do you have for a line here?
Oh, I'm sorry. I have Ravens by 9.5.
Oh, wow. Way off. I said 12. It's 13.
Really?
I don't think they're screwing around after 62-7 Sunday night. I think these odd makers have to jack these up.
Cardinals aren't that bad. You think
their
Cardinals
road games have been miserable, though, right? Who did they? I can't remember now, but there are some bad ones.
I guess I'm looking at Football Outsiders DVOA after 6 weeks. That's not updated for this week. And the Cardinals were 31st. And that was before they got the crap kicked out of them by Pittsburgh.
Yeah. Let's keep in mind, the Vikings killed the Cardinals at home.
I'm way off this week, and I'll let you in on a little secret, Cousin Sal. I do not have a good feel of the league right now.
Really?
The last
All right.
2 weeks, well, I've been under 500 in my picks and my column. Like, I'm really having trouble figuring out who's...
Yeah, but don't apologize. Let's just go three-team teasers. Here's another one. Miami at the Giants.
All right. Well, I'm going to change my pick on this, considering what's happened in the last one. I'll go Giants by 13.
All right. Well, you went too high there.
All right.
I said 9, and it's 10.
Oh, that's what I had! Oh, it's a mess.
Did you talk about looking ahead? The Giants have to be looking ahead. You know, sometimes teams don't play well because they're looking ahead at their schedule. The Giants have to play well because November looks like this. At New England, at San Fran, Philly, at New Orleans, Green Bay, and at Dallas. That goes into December a little. But have you ever heard anything so bad?
That's pretty bad. Basically, we're looking at an Andrew Luck three-team teaser with the Giants, Saints, and Titans. We just banged that out.
I like it. I mean, we might have to put five teams on here. Can Arizona still get them?
Do you believe in that Eli Manning corollary that a Giants fan sent me after they blew that Seahawks game? And they were like, look, don't you know you never take Eli when he's laying that kind of points at home. He's always going to mess it up.
I have to think Eli has gotten wind of their November schedule.
Eli. All right, we're in on that tease.
Here's another one. Well, I'm not betting against this Jacksonville team, but they're at Houston.
I am so off. Texans by 7.5.
All right, I had 10.5, and it's 10.
Jesus. Seriously, when's the last time I've been this off?
Yeah, not for a while. 5-1 for me. Tend into the late games. I mean, is there a game there that you're interested in seeing? That's the early slate.
The Giants-Dolphins game will be fun for the Eli factor. If he's
I guess you'll
know.
That's a bad early slate, though.
It all really is. But you know
that is a bad job by the NFL, Billy. Bad job on a Sunday early. Bad job.
Dog, you have got to have better games. You've got to have better games. That is a huge, huge Sunday for them.
Well, Mike, that is an excellent job by you. Recognize it. I can't ever say that word. Recognizing that those are bad games. Good job by you, Mike. Bad job by the NFL.
Doug, there's no baseball. No baseball this weekend. No basketball. Just hockey. You got to have better games.
And another excellent point, Mike. There is no baseball this weekend. How do you do it?
Right,
These guys have to get back together.
I miss them so much. It was one of those rare breakups that was just bad for both parties.
Yeah. Pass the tip jar around. We'll get it going. What do they need? $15 million? All right. Late afternoon, Detroit at Denver. They have a line out suggesting that that Stafford will be playing. There's no structural damage in that ankle, so.
Yeah, what are the odds Javid Best and Matthew Stafford got hurt? I didn't see that one coming.
Yeah.
I think this is the textbook classic all-time road favorite by 3.5 line. I'm going to go Lions by 3.5.
Good for you, Billy. It is 3.5.
I'm on the board.
I thought it'd be a little higher. I thought it'd be 4.5. What's the line if the Dolphins win that game 15-0?
The line
be higher, right?
Who's the Lions' backup? Sean Hill?
Yeah.
I'm more excited for that game than any other game except the Pats game.
Yeah.
I can't get enough of Tebow. Funny when his incompletions are so bad, it adds to like the magic, in my opinion.
It is fun. I call it fate in the right person.
It's like watching somebody overcome some, like, it's like they have, like, extra tape on his left arm so he can't throw it accurately all the time, but yet it somehow works. It's amazing.
Yeah. Washington at Buffalo.
Are these both bye week? No. The Bills had the bye week. All right, Bills
bye. Washington played like that a bye week. They're actually close with Carolina for the half, and then it fell apart.
This is in Toronto.
Oh, good. Thanks. Good call there. That's right. Joe this Mead. Is a Toronto game.
That's why he gets the big bucks. The Bills, that's going to change my pick. I forgot about that. I'm going to say Bills by 5.5 now.
I said exactly that, and it's 6.
Oh, that's what I had. Joe Mead killed me. So
they definitely give the Bills more of a home edge in Toronto. Well, I guess it makes sense. They're closer than the stinking Tampa Bay Bucks got in London.
When Washington lost Moss, and then Hightower, who is the best of their motley crew of backs. I mean, they have no game breaker on that team.
They're done, right? They're completely done?
Yeah, you're right. I'm writing them off.
I sort of think Shanahan, because he has to be like a dick in these situations. I think he pulled Grossman a little early, too. I mean, they were in first place before that game they lost to. But who'd they lose to last week?
Beck wasn't bad, though.
Eagles. He wasn't bad, actually, yeah. I just think it screws the chemistry up a little, going and taking them out there. I bet most of the players wanted Grossman taking the snaps.
Joe Mead.
Yes.
That's a nice matchup for your Bills.
Yeah, it is. It's worked out well. It's a good time to play the Redskins.
It really is, because your defense and your secondary is the Achilles heel, and that's not a team that's going to throw for 400 yards on you under any circumstances. I think you're in good shape for that one.
No, just worried about the whole Toronto thing.
Yeah.
Now I'm looking, coming off a bye week and then going to Toronto. When do the actual Buffalo fans get to see their team? It'll have been a month, right?
Something
yeah,
like that.
Fair.
Yeah.
That's not fair, Joe Mead.
Good job by you, Joe Mead.
I watch him on TV.
Good job by you, Joe.
Cleveland at San Francisco.
Oh.
Here's another one. How many three-team teasers can we make?
How bad is Cleveland's offense? Have you ever seen an offense like that? They ran Montario Hardesty like 47 times in that game, and I don't think he got fantasy points. I think he finished like 80 yards.
I would have loved this observation from you sometime around 11:15 Eastern Time Sunday when you urged us to bet the Browns in the second half.
Oh, I stand by it. That was one of the great bets. We lost on a 25-yard block field goal. I stand by it.
If the second half is 17-14, it's a great bet. They scored 3 points in the second half.
I stand by it. It was a win. I'm on a cold streak.
You're nuts. You're going to be standing by homeless on the road if we don't win a game.
I know. We have our new Andrew Luck plan. It's going to save us. what's funny is in the super contest, I'm 19 and 14.
So are
somehow,
you?
Yeah, somehow that's not translating to my wallet. 49ers by 8.5.
You're going to get this. I said 7, and it's 9.5.
Mm.
All right, so you're coming back. It's 1, 2, 3, 4. I hate when this happens. It's 6-4 me, including the tie. And now we're at your game.
How many teams have not scored 100 points yet?
Oh, you have that at the ready? You know what it is?
Yeah.
100 points. Damn. We're in week 8. Some teams have played 7. Some teams have played 6. So it's about 16 points a game. I know the Rams haven't. I'm going to say the Colts haven't.
I'll just give you
a hint. I'm going to even say like Arizona. I'm going to say 5 teams haven't.
You got it. Nice.
Is it?
Seattle, St. Louis, Miami, Cleveland, and Jacksonville. St. Louis has scored an amazing 56 points in 6 games.
Wow.
And that's really the stat of the year. They're averaging 9.3 points a game.
I point out to you that we're winning Saturday night. The Cardinals had 16 runs Saturday night. The Rams hadn't scored 16. They scored 16 once in 6 weeks.
Yeah.
7 weeks.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's pretty disgusting.
Let's get to the big game.
New England at Pittsburgh.
There it is. There it is. I mean, we always beat Pittsburgh. That has to be reflected in the line. I have Pats by 2.5 in Pittsburgh.
Oh, well, that's what I had, and it's even more reflected. It's 3.
Very fair. Hey, listen, the past doesn't have anything to do with now, but for whatever reason, the Pats love playing in Pittsburgh. And
yeah.
If Pittsburgh beats them one time, that should be the line the Pats should
be. You're confident. I thought you might be a little...
I'm not confident.
Oh, no?
No. Oh, I'm not confident. I'm just saying I think Pittsburgh is going to be in their locker room all week talking about how the Pats always beat them, and this is our week, and we got to beat them, and we can't let them, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. Well, we'll figure that out. I mean, that Pittsburgh team wins. They're all of a sudden leaps and bounds above the Ravens in my eyes in that division.
I think that already happened. Remember, everybody was pouring dirt on the Steelers, and meanwhile, they're going to be a 2-seed.
Yep. All right, back to the crap game, Cincinnati at Seattle.
Oh, good, another crap game. Purely home field Seattle thing, Seattle by 3.
There you go. That's what I had, and it's exactly 3.
Yep.
So let's add this up. You have 6. I have 8. There are 2 games left. And you have not much leeway. I was off by 0.5 on both, but you could probably.
I'm
going to
nail both these exacta.
All right, Dallas at Philly Sunday night.
Eagles by 3. Boom, done.
I said Eagles by 3, and it's 3.5.
Oh,
so we tie. It should be 3. They're dead even. They're dead even.
That would be 3 by. That would be 3 by Sunday.
I really think they're dead even, these teams. They both turn it over at crucial times. The quarterbacks are mistake prone. The coaches can't hold leads. Big play defense that gets tired at the end. This has to end in a tie.
All right, last one, just for pride.
Here we go, for pride. Monday night, San Diego at Kansas City.
One of my only good predictions last Sunday, that this would be for a share of first place in the AFC West, and it is.
Yep.
Chargers by 3.
That's what I said. And it's Chargers by 3.5.
I don't agree with that line.
I need to remind you, I know we love rooting against the Chargers. We love betting against them. I think we're going to like rooting for the Chiefs this week. But we have a lot of money on San Diego, theoretically. Theoretical money. San Diego and Green Bay to win their division. So at some point, one of these weeks, we're going to have to root for the Chargers.
All right. Fair enough. I'm not that worried, but... the Chiefs love playing the Chargers.
Mm-hmm.
Remember I told you my friend Connor, the Chiefs fan, in week 3 when the Chiefs were in San Diego, and he's like, we're going to win this game or come close. We always beat San Diego. And I was like, are you crazy? You're like 14-point underdogs.
Right.
And they almost won. So there's something going on with this one.
It was last year on a Monday. Well, this is the one. Remember, one of their favorite. I don't know what's going on with the Chiefs. You have to hand it to them. Like, after 3 weeks, I think we had them dead last in the league. And they just turned it around with their three of their best players gone. I don't know how they did it, but we rarely give credit.
Connor had a good theory on this that he told me last week. First week, They lose Eric Barrett, basically the start of the game. He's the heart of their defense. They fall apart. They get killed.
Yep.
Second week, Jamaal Charles goes down. They fall apart. They get killed. Everybody writes him off. Next week, they go into San Diego and really almost win that game. And they've been fine ever since. So maybe it was just two fluky injuries that kind of threw him off kilter. And now Todd Haley has a beard going. They're back.
Yeah, that could be it.
Nice beard, by the way.
It's good. It is good. Maybe it's the Ewing theory. Maybe it's the J.R. Ewing theory, where they thought they were going to get shot if they didn't win a game. And now all of a
sudden they're not bad. The other thing is they're running all the same plays that they ran with Charles. The guys aren't quite as good, but it's not their offense really hasn't changed that much. And he also wasn't on the field that much. He was only getting 15, 16 carries a game.
Speaking of the Raiders Chiefs right now, out of the miserable head scratchers this week, did that rank one, two, or three in the games that surprised you? I put the Colts third. I knew they'd get beat, but not by 100 points.
I thought the Chiefs were going to beat the Raiders, so I wasn't surprised by that one.
That was such.
I really did.
I mean, just everything. Like Carson Palmer showing his face and throwing three interceptions. Like it.
Well, but that didn't surprise me either. It would have surprised me if he played well.
I know. I guess so. I'll tell you what.
It was funny, like hearing people talk about Carson Palmer does not have the timing of that offense down yet. It's like his passes were bloops. Like he had no zip on the ball at all. I don't think it has anything to do with timing. If you're throwing a pass that's in the air for 5 seconds, it's going to get picked.
They may have made a mistake. Everyone might be right about this one. I'll tell you who made a mistake. You the other night. Yeah, you did it again.
No.
You left me a voicemail. Yeah, it was after the Josh Freeman debacle in London.
Let me see if I can find it.
Cousin Sal, drunk Bill Simmons leaving you a voicemail. Except this time I'm not drunk. I accidentally mixed a gram of peyote with a handful of silly putty. Now, I'll do anything to take my mind off that dreadful stink job of performance by my boyfriend, life partner, Joshy Boy, Twinkle Toes, Bread Pudding, Geronimo Freeman. I'm disgusted. He stunk up this whole city of England. And London hasn't seen a jerk job like that since George Michael got caught in the men's room performing careless whispers on himself. I don't know if I can even be here when Joshy Boy gets back to the States. I may have to move on to a new love. Maybe the Lord will convince Tim Tebow to take me. Or maybe I'll hook up with Uncle Tony for the PTI 10th anniversary. I can get used to his raggedy beard tickling the back of my nether regions. Or maybe I'll hook up with Cameron Crowe's Pearl Jam 20 doc, which examines the dynamics and pressures of a band over time. Decisions, decisions. Oh, wait a minute. Looks like I'm not going to get to choose. Here comes a train heading straight into my man cave. What are the odds? Cue the sound effect. Sports guy out.
There you go. You can put a sound effect in for no reason at the end.
I got to say.
Yeah, go ahead.
Next week's call might be about Tebow if he wins.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, you might see there might be some sort of religious conversion type of.
All right. Oh, that opens it up a lot for me. Wow.
Wow, now listen. Josh lost me a pick again. I didn't think he played well, and I'm really starting to worry about my relationship with him.
All right. Yeah. Well, you're fair weather. You can move on.
I've been Googling Tim Tebow and stuff. I mean, I do think that we're in a transition stage.
Excellent. That's good.
Cousin Sal, anything to plug?
Yeah, let's go. Jimmy Kimmel Live tonight. Hugh Laurie and Snooki. And the Dancing with the Stars cast off later in the week. David Spade, Justin Timberlake. My Grantland blog on Thursday, and let's see. Root Hard for I have you didn't go with me on this. Under 1.5 extra inning games in the World Series through five, there have been none.
And, amazing, because every game's been good except for one of them.
I know, and you know what that means. We're looking at two in a row right now for 6 and 7.
What a World Series! I really could not be enjoying it anymore, and I love that, like these games in Texas, these night games. They really feel like I like watching them. They're good in HD, you know. Like,
yeah,
there's something
it's a lot of
just
fun.
Feels like
that's over with though. Back
it's
and,
crazy
back
that more. I think the fact that more people aren't watching it, and like even on Twitter last night, it wasn't trending, you know, in the late innings. Like it's just, I think it's really weird what's happening to baseball. I don't know if anyone under 25 cares.
Yeah, I mean they
it's like
almost
it's our generation.
I mean, we shouldn't have watched even a minute of that Colts Saints game.
I know.
You had to keep looking back.
It's really like the CBS demographic of like the people who watch Blue Bloods and, you know, CSI. That's the baseball demo.
Yeah. You need impressive. To be able to bet baseball more. They need to figure something out. In-game betting, there's just too much downtime. It's 50 seconds between pitches and, you know, bet on cutaways and opening pitches for George Bush, whatever you need to do.
Well, we also should have bet on the over-under for Baby Doll James Dixon's best man speech the other night, because it went 23, 24 minutes, and I think the over-under would have been like 15 and a half, so that was amazing.
Definitely. It's our friend married this poor Midwestern girl, like very humble family, and all the family heard about it was how cheap the bride's husband-to-be, who most of them just met that night, is for 25 minutes. Unbelievable.
It was a roast. It was great. All right, Cousin Sal, that's a good job by you today.
Good job next week, Billy. Talk to you then.
All right, talk to you. All right, switching gears quickly and bringing it over to one of the producers of The Real Rocky, which is an honorary 30 for 30. It premieres tonight on ESPN. It is about Chuck Wepner, a boxer from the 70s who was basically the inspiration to Rocky. It's been a point of contention. Mike Tolan, what's happening?
Good to be back, Bill.
It's
funny you talk about the 30 for 30 thing. It's a major TiVo problem, right? Because it's not officially 30 for 30, and all those guys who have it on their TiVo don't get these films anymore.
It was one of the many reasons why it was a deranged decision to change the title of the series. It made no sense. People still feel like these are 30 for 30s anyway. And
there's actually a story in the LA Times this morning. He calls it a 30 for 30. So I guess that's good. People spend trillions of dollars to build brands like that, right? And oh well.
When it makes it so that you can't enter it for an Emmy or nobody can DVR it because it doesn't, their season pass doesn't click on, that's some damage. So we're trying to fix it. But
well, that's why we're doing this, right?
Yeah, we're doing this. But before we do, I want to just, you know, that Philly season. It ends with Ryan Howard in a clump.
So I get this email from you, as you recall, although I'm not thinking it's not really on your radar. That was Kol Nidre, which is the night before Yom Kippur, which is the holiest night of the year for people of the faith. So the night before, which was my birthday, I had a bunch of guys over to my house to watch the Yankees lose to the Tigers. Jeez, it seems like forever ago, like three series ago. And we all strategized about what are we going to do? Well, an advantage of being on the West Coast is the game starts at 5:30, and with Halliday pitching, it'll probably be over. My buddy Keith has a service at Wilshire Boulevard Temple at 9, so we're like all set. We're wearing our ties and jackets, rooting for a quick game. We got the quick game, but it didn't really work out the way we wanted. And then I'm sitting in Temple, not that I would ever like bring out a BlackBerry in Temple, but I get this email from you saying, geez, who had a worse end of their season, the Red Sox or the Phillies? And I'm thinking, huh. Of course, I left the house so quick, I didn't even know what happened to Ryan. I just saw him go down. Didn't even know yet that it was an Achilles tendon, and now he's out for probably half the season. So
I'm pretty sure that's never happened before, a team losing a playoff series on the same play that their best player, one of their best players,
well, goes down. When I saw it happen, I was like, I mean, your kids are starting to play sports. I thought it was like my kid when he strikes out or he does something really embarrassing and he wants to deflect. So he'll pretend to be injured. That's what I thought, because it was such a tough series for Ryan after he hit the 3-run homer in game one off Loesch. He had 6 RBIs, and then he pretty much went 0 for the rest of the series. So
Well, that was tough. I mean, pitching, we're finding out that assembling the most awesome, inexpensive starting pitchers maybe isn't a great strategy for October. The Red Sox did the same thing.
Yesterday, we, as you probably know, let go of Oswald and Lidge. So, you know, one guy who, you know, pretty much won us the title in 08, the other guy who would have been making 16. But we still have, you know, Hamels is eligible for arbitration or long-term. I sort of feel like you may want to roll the dice and just arbitrate and pay him 13 or 14 and keep him for another year and see if he's a guy you really want to make another nine-figure commitment to, because that would be three. And then you have Blanton, Worley, and Kendrick vying for the two spots. So
they're fine.
I guess I would still take my staff over yours by a little.
You're going to win 95 games every year.
Yeah.
But, you just see it in the playoffs. You just never know which these guys.
Well, that was the thing about getting Cliff Lee. I mean, we didn't lose to the Giants because we didn't have enough pitching. We lost because we didn't hit. I mean, worst of these five, been in the playoffs 5 years in a row, arguably the worst rotation was the year we won it because we were killing the ball. So, but
don't you
Bill, it's an interesting day to talk to you.
I know. Don't you love that the Boston and Philly self-loathing is back? It's like
it's
the
so
titles
great.
Never happened.
But so I get up every morning with my kid who's 12, and we have this half-hour ritual where we have breakfast, pancakes, and coffee and the sports page and a half an hour TV before school. So we fish around the dial. And what do we find on Classic this morning? But, of course, Buckner game.
Game 6,
25th anniversary. So, and then I go to breakfast, and who's on the screen behind me? Theo. In Chicago. How are you feeling about all that?
It all comes around. I think there's a weird comfort into knowing that that your sports life is totally dysfunctional again, and that's where I'm at. You know how it's going. You're back to bitching about Andy Reid.
Well, when I saw
Vic's contract was dumb and all that.
Vin Scully will just stay on the Buckner thing. So it's Vinny doing the game, and
I know
Henderson's up against Aguilera on the top of the 10th, and they flash back to Donnie Moore, and of course there's the shot of Gene Mauch in the dugout. So of course, I'm back in 64 all over again.
Yeah,
it never ends. It's just
The
Andy Reid thing is crazy though, because I went to Philly for that weekend. Halliday wins, Lee has a 4-run lead, loses it, Eagles have a 20-point lead, blow it to the 49ers. So there's this whole thing now, which you know about, whether you're rooting for your team to sneak into the playoffs and be one and out, and then, okay, here we are again, and Reed comes back for his 14th year, or do we just go 6-10 and we finally get rid of him? It's tough. We got balance at home. I don't know.
I don't think the league isn't good enough this year. The Eagles do two things. Well, they do one thing really well. They get big-ass plays. McCoy rips off those 10-plus runs. Vic rips off runs with his legs. You can throw deep. You're always in any game. I think that team has a chance to get a two seed still.
That's just because you have Vic on your fantasy teams.
Well, he hasn't been that good.
I know. But you're hoping.
It's a scary team to watch, though. When you watch the Eagles on offense, you always feel like they're about to have a giant play. How many teams are like that? There's three teams that in the entire league.
Deshaun hasn't even started yet. He's done pretty much nothing, but we got
the Niners loss was the Niners loss was indefensible. You had, just to blow a 20-point lead to Alex Smith, I don't even know how you do that.
Two field goals missed when our kicker that we had forever is kicking on the other side. Well, I'm sure you've talked about it. But to take your offensive line coach and make him the defensive coordinator.
You didn't like that idea?
I think that's the ultimate act of hubris. If you're looking through the canon of Shakespeare, those are the kind of things where, the guy dies on his sword. It's like Andy's, it's Waterloo. It's scary.
Well, it's funny. Belichick does that too. Belichick has decided the coordinators or whoever he puts in there, it's going to be fine. He'll promote.
Yeah.
Promoted Josh McDaniels that time. He was 28.
Right.
So these guys, they think it doesn't really ultimately matter. These guys are going to be yes men anyway. But that's a really weird move, though. I thought that was the weirdest move of the season.
Crazy. Well, he's a great guy. We all love him. There's all these stories about how he worked his way up. He was actually a backup linebacker in the USFL. That's his only defensive experience. I couldn't even find the footage, though, in the archives.
Yeah.
So it just was, a guy who Andy loved. And, that's loyalty to a fault, I would say. And they just can't seem to draft a guy to help. And then they bring in Nambi, who's the biggest offseason acquisition, and they take a bump and run guy and they put him in the zone where he's basically ineffectual. He and Cromartie and Samuel, none of them can really tackle. They have no linebackers. They thought Clay Matthews' brother would be good just because he has long hair and the same last name. It's scary.
That's bad philosophy. Let's talk about your movie. So, just a quick story. Wide World of Sports, 75, I'm going to say. I watched the Webner Ali fight.
Really?
I remember it vividly,
Wait, so you had to watch it on tape delay, the week later? Because it was on closed circuit.
Yeah, they showed it on like a Saturday. They always to show those fights a week later, and I totally remember it. I remember how bloody his face was. I used to love Ali. They would always rerun the Ali fight, so I remember watching that. And when Rocky came out a year later, I mean, Stallone even kind of admitted at the time, like, yeah, when I did, you know, I was watching this fight and that's how I got the inspiration. I always kind of grew up thinking that Wepner and Rocky were related in some way. And then at some point, Stallone decided that that wasn't the case, which is a lot of what the movie's about. What made you want to do this movie?
I grew up in Philly, as you know, ran those steps 100 times. It was like, you know, part training, but part just sort of like imagining. I mean, that's pretty iconic for a kid growing up in Philly. They make that movie. And
yeah,
when we would drive to the vet to Eagles or Phillies games, we'd go through South Philly and you'd go through the Italian market. And that's where he ran, and the meat locker. I actually had friends whose dad worked at Cross Brothers Meat Packers, where Joe Frazier worked, and that whole sort of training with the slabs of beef. So you're steeped in it. We always knew about Wepner. Didn't really think much of him. He's just kind of a journeyman with a great nickname who bled a lot and lost to all the great fighters. But I'm always attracted to larger than life figures with huge flaws, which make them very complex and very contradictory. And in 03, there's this little story that Chuck Wepner, the real Rocky, is finally suing Stallone for a piece of that rather considerable pie. And like,
yes,
you know, you start digging into it and you think, wow, that's pretty cool. So we reached out and we met his lawyer, Tony Mango, of like, I think Mango. No, not really, but he's a great guy. He was very receptive. We had lunch with Chuck, and you know, it wasn't obviously a very competitive environment. So we optioned Chuck's life story for not that much money, and off we went. My original idea was to make kind of an American Splendor film where you would shoot the documentary, you'd get a script, you'd hire actors, and you'd combine the two. I mean, when you think about, I don't know if you like that movie, but I thought it was genius, and there's really nothing much like it, where you have Paul Giamatti and Harvey Pekar basically sharing the same frame, and there's this seamless back and forth between the doc and the scripted, and you're not sure what's fact and what's fiction. So that was the original idea. Then I get this call from my agent that there's this guy named Jeff Fierzig who came fishing around for the life rights. You know, bad news for him was somebody already had him. Good news was, you know, the agent thought we'd actually, it was actually one of those rare good moves by an agent who actually did the right thing and pushed something forward. So we found each other. We had compatible interests, and we started going down the road together. And then ultimately, we decided it would be better to work on parallel tracks and develop the feature as a more conventional story and to work on developing the doc. So we shot the doc. I mean, a lot of these guys are old. I mean, we went and shot for, you know, a couple of months, shot dozens and dozens of hours. Jeff's idea, I can't say enough about Jeff Fierzig. He made a doc you may not have seen called The Devil and Daniel Johnston.
Yeah, I saw that.
Great movie. One of my favorite all-time docs. About a kind of crazy, kooky, cult folk singer. So Jeff ends up writing a script with Jerry Stahl for the feature, which is great, and which we ultimately attach Liev Schreiber to play Chuck and Naomi Watts to play his first wife and Christina Hendricks to play his second. But the doc, you know, is in the can now. We're kind of figuring out what to do, and 30 for 30 comes along, the real 30 for 30, which now has led to the afterlife of 30 for 30. So, you know, had a great chat with Connor Schell and all the guys at ESPN. This sort of fits right into the mandate of telling interesting stories that you probably don't know anything about. So, you know, it's only been 7 years or so.
And do you believe that Stallone just completely ripped off Wepner?
Well, do I believe he was inspired by Chuck? Definitely. I mean, ripped off is harsh, Bill. I mean, do I think Chuck should have gotten something for it? Yeah. But, you know, Chuck's a funny guy, and he'll be the first to tell you he's often his own worst enemy and kind of plays the victim a little bit because, you know, I think there might have been opportunities along the way to get something. He, as is discussed in the film, was given an opportunity in Rocky II to actually play a part. Stallone wrote I mean, this was used in the lawsuit. He wrote a character for a boxer named Chink Webber, pretty close to Chuck Wepner. He brought Chuck in. He asked him to audition for the role, and he says, you know, you're playing the boxer. Just be yourself. And in the movie, we really give it a much more dramatic treatment. He's up all night partying, as he often did, and he comes, you know, pretty wasted to the audition and really just kind of blows it. They send him out, you know, Chuck, take your time, read it over again, come on back in, just relax, and just, you know, got nowhere near it. So he didn't get the part. The next time he saw him, I mean, this is like, you can't make this stuff up, which is why we think the movie's going to play amazingly well, too. Chuck is now in jail for cocaine, and Sylvester Stallone shows up on the same prison yard shooting Copland, and the warden comes to get Chuck and says, hey, man, I want you to come out, of course, shackled. Come out, I want you to meet somebody. And there's, as Chuck says, there I am with Rocky on one side and the Raging Bull on the other. There's this amazing photo in the film tonight with Stallone, De Niro, and Wepner. It's crazy.
All right, so it's on tonight. We have to go, unfortunately, because we ran out of studio time. Well, I'm going to have you come back, though, to discuss Andy in much more detail. But
I love it. You know,
this is a good doc, though. I urge
people
to watch
it.
Yeah, it's good. And also, like, you, people like us know the Wepner story, but there's no way anybody under 30 even knows anything about this guy. And,
that's true.
You know, the Bayonne Bleeder. When Bleeder is in your nickname, that's somebody who's going to make for a good documentary.
Yeah. When that's your claim to fame is getting pummeled, I want to see that.
Right.
Cool.
Mike Tolan, good luck. The Real Rocky.
Who's going to be your manager?
ESPN, probably Chuck Wepner.
We've
been
like
looking
we'll
long
well.
And hard at him. It's terrible. We have no candidate. All right.
See ya.
Target the sun off. Whoa.
Thank you for downloading the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Too much fun.
Check out more podcasts at the iTunes Music Store or at Podcenter at ESPNRadio.com.
Peace out.